Hey, it's Ben. Coming up on the next edition of the Ben Maller Show, when the long Thanksgiving weekend comes to an end, we are back behind the powerful microphones of FSR in the overnight, talking about all the action from Week 12, the Sunday that was, including that Titan-Patriot game, the Rams and the Packers, and Sunday Night Football between the Browns and Ravens, and all the big news of the weekend. We talk about it on the next Ben Maller Show.
Thanks for listening to the best of the Ben Maller Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 2 to 6 Eastern, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And to find your local station for the Ben Maller Show at foxsportsradio.com, you can find it there. Or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of the Ben Maller Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Cowboy up, welcome in, unless that's not the case. Welcome in the beginning of another edition of the Ben Maller Show. We are together in the air everywhere as we are all systems go, barely, coast to coast, border to border, and beyond on the vast and mighty powerful microphones of FSR emanating live from under the light, the on-air light, the Fox Sports Radio studios at a secret location somewhere in the North Woods. If you only knew what happened behind the scenes here. Oh, man. What an adventure. What an adventure. Man, oh, man. Running around like banshees, Mike the Headless Chicken trying to get the show on the air. But a team effort there. Tremendous job by all involved. And here we are. We saved you yet again from the Brian Finley experience.
Vomiting.
It would have been a freaking nightmare situation. So it's going to be a little different than the normal. Thank you. Yes. A little different than the normal Friday shenanigans here as we head into a Black Friday, which used to be, I've done this show a lot over the Thanksgiving weekend, and it used to be people out waiting online all night, but I think they stopped that a couple years ago for most places because of online shopping now. But if anyone happens to know anyone listening, sitting out, camped out to get a 75-inch television for pennies on the dollar, and you have to camp out all night, well, we're your camp out station here, doing it live and local in your eardrums all night long.
But we're doing it live.
We're doing it live. All right, so our lead this hour obviously comes from Jerry's World. That was the game, and I've determined through editorial control that we will start with this game. Dallas playing host to the Las Vegas Raiders, a tradition Thanksgiving Day football game with the Cowboys, not the Raiders. The Raiders don't play on Thanksgiving all that much. But Jim Nance and Tony Romo, they were there in the booth. Did you watch? Maybe not. Well, Derek Carr taking full advantage of the generosity, giving thanks to the officials and to the Dallas Cowboys secondary. He ended up with 373 yards. Yes, Derek Carr in a game past week 9 with 373 yards and a touchdown, and the Raiders slipped past the Cowboys. Raiders led throughout the game, but they ended up having to go to overtime. They win it on a Daniel Carlson game winner, 29 yards out with 4:31 left in bonus time. We were that close to having another tie. So with the victory, the Raiders are very much alive. They're on the outside looking in, but the Raiders now 6-5. Dallas drops to 7-4 on the season. And if you've listened at all over my time at Fox Sports Radio, you know the better story is in the losing locker room. So let us discuss the question. Is it time to start stressing out for the Cowboys? And I am nodding my head yes. You might want to get the panic button ready for Dallas. Get that panic button ready. So I've got gumball machine, airlines, and manure. And we'll tie all of this together in this Maller monologue. And we are going to make a discount television, because that's the number one thing people buy. From what I was reading a story the other day about this on Black Friday. TVs, that's the day to buy TVs. All right, so A, listen, we are beginning the most joyous time of the year. I imagine a memo will come down from management over the weekend here that starting next week, we will have nothing but Christmas music on the airwaves of Fox Sports Radio. Tis the holiday season, right? It's in full effect. The weather's getting cold in most places, and Dallas is starting to implode. Yes, 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 yes. Now, stop me if you have been to this Broadway show before. Because I've been here before. I've seen this before. Now, we are visiting the NFL nightclub called Deja Vu. Mike McCarthy had the look on his face of a dazed and confused head coach. This is a pernicious decline for the Cowboys. And who are the real Dallas Cowboys? Dallas got off to a 6-1 start. They were feeling very good about themselves, and right around week 9, heading into week 9, it all went upside down. The last 4 weeks, the Cowboys are 1-3. Last month, Dallas is 1-3. They lost to the Broncos, Chiefs, and Raiders. How embarrassed must the Chargers feel that they could not beat this Dallas team? Luckily for the Cowboys, they do not play in the AFC West as their home division, or they would be screwed. Now, additionally, we must discuss Dak Prescott. What are the Cowboys paying Dak Prescott for all that money? I mean, serious question. Right? He's the third highest paid quarterback in the league. And this was an opportunity for him to step up and say, hey, this is my time. You need me to step up. I'm the third highest paid QB in the NFL. I'm going to earn my keep in this game. And he failed. Now, a couple of receivers were out. CeeDee Lamb in the concussion protocol. Amari Cooper out, COVID-related. So this was a chance for Dak Prescott to say, I'm on the same level with all the other great quarterbacks. Because when truly great quarterbacks are missing receivers, they still win games. For example, Aaron Rodgers. Remember that Thursday night game against Arizona, and he was without his top three receivers, I believe, in that game, and he was playing with a bunch of guys who deliver packages in the spare time, not playing football, and Rodgers played well enough to get the win in that game. Dak Prescott, not so much. Now, the numbers look good, right? The numbers look good, and the uneducated fan, the box score reader will say, what are you talking about, Myler? You're just a hater on Dak Prescott. No, I'm not. I'm an equal opportunity quarterback criticizer is what I am. The final stat line looked fine. It was gaudy. It was also misleading. Dak Prescott, game manager, glorified game manager. That's what he was for 75% of the game against the Raiders. Dakota, game manager. All right. Then in the fourth quarter, he stepped up. Now, going into the fourth quarter, Dak Prescott had 160 yards passing, one touchdown, was averaging less than 7 yards attempt, which is average across the board. And, you know, he was an imposter. And then in the fourth quarter, the accuracy is an issue throughout the game. But he is like a gumball machine, Dak Prescott. You never know what's going to drop down, what flavor gumball is going to drop down when you put your quarter in there, 50 cents or 75 cents, whatever it is, and you twist the handle there on that classic gumball machine. You don't know what you're going to get. And then in the fourth quarter, presto! He went gangbusters in the fourth quarter, a sense of urgency. And Dak Prescott in the fourth quarter at 209 yards passing and a touchdown. The Cowboys tied the game. And you look at some of the numbers here, and they're not great. Dak Prescott's 4 games this year. Dallas has not run for 100 yards. And Dak Prescott has lost all 4 of those games. In his career, you look at the numbers, 29 times the Cowboys have run more than they've passed. And in those 29 games with Dak Prescott, the Cowboys are 29-0. On Thanksgiving, in part because they couldn't run the ball very efficiently and they were behind by a decent margin most of the day, Dallas went with a pass-heavy offense trying to get back in the game, and they did get back in the game, but 47 passes to 20 runs, the breakdown on that. And when they don't run more than they pass in the Dak Prescott era, he is now 19-31. That's the Cowboys record. So I go back to my initial statement about Dak being an imposter and a game manager, and You look at the numbers, and this is a quarterback. If you run the ball a lot and mix in the pass, he's fine. If you pass and don't run, Dak Prescott is exposed. He's in his birthday suit. He's naked for the world to see. All right, now part B of this. This particular game, the Raiders and the Cowboys, was not exactly the Mona Lisa. You could say it was sloppy. The officials repeatedly interjected themselves into the action. The Zebras wanted to get some quality boob tube time. And they forced their way in. They said, hey, listen, I got to work on Thanksgiving. My family's watching on TV, so let me throw a flag here, there, and everywhere. Now, unfortunately, nobody tunes into the NFL to see the referees other than the relatives, the uncles, aunts, the cousins, the parents, the siblings of the referees. No one else. No one else tunes in saying, boy, I hope we get a heavily handed officiated game today. That would be great. Referees should be like the old trope about children. Be seen, but not heard. Right? Referees should be seen, but not heard. The rare and appropriate penalty. Let them play. Let them play. Go ahead. Let them play. Well, the Raiders, they finished with 14 penalties, 110 yards, and they gave the Cowboys four first downs. And then Dallas said, hold my beer, as the referees interjected. The Cowboys were also penalized a staggering 14 times. If you watch the game, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. And they handed the Raiders 166 yards and seven first downs. Seven first downs the Raiders gained via the officials. Now, the Cowboys had 110 penalty yards on third down alone in the Thanksgiving Day loss. That is the most by any team on third down, we are told, in a game since at least 1991. I guess they stopped looking. They stopped looking in 1991. They didn't go back any further than that. So combined, if you do the Maller math, 28 penalties, 276 yards dished out from the arbitrators of pigskin justice. Now, one player in particular, he gets to wear the shame bell. He does. He has a big circle around his name here. I'm talking about defensive back Anthony Brown of the Cowboys. Rather generic name. I think we could agree on that. It's kind of a generic name. He gets the game ball from the Raiders. This Mama Luke, Anthony Brown, had not one, not two, not three, but four defensive pass interference calls by himself. He cost the Cowboy defense 91 yards and 13 points. Wow. Wow. Wowzers. That's not all bad news. Anthony Brown, I believe he did pick up a new endorsement. They're bringing back those that old marketing campaign from Southwest Airlines. Wanna Get Away. He will be starring in a Wanna Get Away commercial for Southwest Airlines. What an emasculating performance. Cowboys defense, even with all the penalties on top of it, they allowed 509 yards. So if you do the math, 509 yards of offense for the Raiders, and then you toss on the penalties, 166 yards, I believe that's close to 700 yards that the Cowboys were able to give up their combined Raider offense with the officials. And Derek Carr, the secret, now he's got to be like Jump Ball Joe. This is the secret for Derek Carr. The secret sauce for Derek Carr to be great is to make sure the referees are in the tank. And anytime a defensive back makes a misstep, throw the yellow flag. It was a yellow flag kind of day in this situation. All right, last word here. So the provocateur, Skip Bayless, a noted Cowboy commentator for Fox Sports, lapdog for Dallas. Skip Bayless blamed these last two Cowboy losses on Amari Cooper's absence. Is that fair or unfair? So in the court of Maller, I say unfair. It is unfair. You're giving Amari Cooper way too much credit. His impact is limited. Cooper has averaged less than five catches a game this year for 64 yards per game. And those are the worst numbers he's had since coming to Dallas from the old Oakland Raiders back in 2018. And the story here is he didn't get vaccinated, and you know, it was his choice, right? His body, his choice. He didn't want to get vaccinated. And so people are holding that against Amari Cooper. But we've learned from all the vaccinated players that have gotten COVID that just because you get the vaccination doesn't mean you're going to avoid being on COVID timeout. And I believe just blaming him, it's great to have a fall guy, but that's a cop-out. And hypotheticals, they are great because you're never wrong. When you deal in the currency of hypotheticals, you're never wrong. Now, theoretically, Amari Cooper could have played and dropped three passes, had one of those passes tipped for a pick six. In my world, that's what happened. So you could blame him for his poor play. But we like accountability. And as far as the injury excuse, which a lot of Cowboy lapdogs have brought up, that is everlasting manure. Every team in the NFL 100% has to deal with injuries. It's a point of demarcation. It's part of the business. The good teams are able to adapt and win without key players. I'm so tired of every hack in media saying, oh, well, you can't blame this guy and that guy because they got all these players out. Yes, you can. Do your job. Next man up. Look at the Baltimore Ravens as a shining example. How many players have the Ravens lost? Key players. And they keep trucking along, and they keep winning. Right? So next man up. You can't hit the pause button. They don't pause until everyone's healthy. It is a war of attrition. And you better have good backups. This is so humiliating for Dallas. You're at home. You're over a touchdown favorite. The Raiders have a no-name substitute head coach. They have a horrific offensive line. They've got holes here, there, and everywhere. And Derek Carr has historically been terrible after this point in the season. And then all of a sudden you go out and just get smoked. But you can blame the referees also. My goodness.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
There's a bear over there. Welcome in. The beginning of another hour of the Ben Maller Show. We are in the air everywhere as we cruise in a Cadillac coast to coast, border to border, and beyond on the vast and mighty powerful microphones of FSR emanating life from the store, the toy store, the Fox Sports Radio studios at a secret location somewhere in the Northwoods. Hope all is well with you. We'll get back to the regularly scheduled portion of the broadcast, and we will open up the phone lines again. No calls last hour, but we'll try to get some calls in here later. We also have lame jokes of the week. And not as many lame jokes as normal, but there were a bunch of jokes. I was surprised. I was like, well, if nobody sends jokes in, I don't have to do it. But we have a big enough volume of joke writers that a number of you did send jokes in. So we'll read some of those coming up later in the hour and have some fun over the holiday weekend. So our lead this hour, though, comes from Motown, where the Detroit Lions, as the tradition continues, played the Thanksgiving Day lid lifter, played host to the Chicago Bears. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, who seemed genuinely enthused, unless they weren't, to call this game. I'm not sure if you got up and watched. If you're on the West Coast, you had to get up early to watch it. It was, you know, an afternoon game on the East Coast, but maybe you missed it. So Cairo Santos connect on a 28-yard game-ending field goal as the Chicago Bears held the ball for over 8 minutes on their final possession, drove down with a lot of help from the Lions, and they get the win 16-14 over the Lions, who remain winless on Thanksgiving Day. There, the Bears are 4-7. They snap a 5-game losing streak. And for the Lions, the hits continue here. The football malpractice. The Lions are 0-10-1. The winless skid goes back to the Matt Patricia era at 15 games since beating Chicago nearly a year ago. And from what I read, Detroit has one more chance to win a game, to not go a full calendar year without winning. So they better win. I think they play the Vikings next, so they better win that. All right, let us discuss. We're going to focus on the other side, Chicago here. Not that that's the better story, but I just can't dedicate all this time to the Lions. I hope you understand. So the question is, with the Bears winning and all of the buildup and all of the lead up in the Chicago media and the national football media about Matt Nagy and his future, does Matt Nagy's outlook change because of this win? And I am shaking my head no, is what I'm doing. So I've got Corn Maze, Ballet, and Interstellar. And we will lock all of these things together. Now, number one. You don't get a feather in your cap. You don't get a notch in your bedpost for beating the Lions. In a nutshell, this was a game where you, if you're Chicago, you had nothing to gain and everything to lose. Okay, the Lions are not the barometer of success. They are the measuring stick of sewage. If you want to see how high the sewage is in the sewer, you check the Lions locker room. You get the temperature out of the Lions locker room. Now, being kind, Chicago, I was not overly impressed in what I saw of the Chicago Bears. Needing a last-second field goal to squeeze out a win by the hair on your chinny-chin-chin does not seem all that impressive to me. That you needed an assist by Detroit to barely get around and come out of the game with a two-point win. Unable to live up to the point spread even. For most of the week, Detroit and Chicago, that game was 3 or 2.5. If you're a gambling person, you know what I'm talking about. Andy Dalton was actually good by Andy Dalton standards. Good by Andy Dalton standards. Very low expectations. He had 300 yards passing. He averaged 8 yards per attempt, which is about all you're going to get out of Andy Dalton. And Chicago could only muster 16 points. The Lions play hard. I don't give them credit for that. You're supposed to play hard. It's your job. It's pro football. The results, though, the Lions are the 30th ranked scoring defense in the NFL, and Chicago scored 16 points. And they needed to go all the way to the end of the game for that to be the final point total. They had less than that, right? They had 13 points, if my computer-like mind is accurate, before that final drive. Now, only the Falcons and Jets have been worse. So no, Matt Nagy is not in a better spot in the eyes of the fan. In the eyes, not the media, the eyes of the fan. The Bears are still blindfolded. They're stuck in a cornfield, in one of those cornfield mazes, going blindly down random paths as they attempt to find their way out of the puzzle. So I still have Chicago in the boondoggle category. Benny's boondoggle. Now, secondly, there is now some spin coming out of the Windy City. I don't know if you saw this or not, but I rolled my eyes when I saw this. Okay, I rolled my eyes. So they've changed the narrative from the middle of this week up until kickoff in Detroit. The story was the Bears were preparing to fire Matt Nagy, that he was not going to make it past the weekend. Now the story has been shifted that was an intentional story, that the state-sponsored NFL media, state-run NFL media, implying that story was a plant used to galvanize the Chicago Bears players. Choo-choo! All aboard the crazy train! All aboard the crazy train! What a farcical story. Let's assume that is true for a moment here. Now, my thoughts on that is not only alarming, it is demoralizing. It is cartoonish. And I would never admit to that, even if the Bears actually did it. You can't admit to that. You turned this into some kind of psychological experiment to iron out the kinks. You needed that to get a win over the Lions? Hello? The Lions? You're using useful idiots in the media as smelling salts. So for the Chicago Bears, I hope that's not true, because if it is, my God, that's a trip to the ballet, the Bolshoi Ballet. Do a pirouette. Knock yourself out. It's preposterous. It would be a dereliction of duties. Now, what are you going to do before you play the Packers or the Vikings? If you did this to get a win over the Lions, then what on God's green earth are you going to do? You got to have a human sacrifice? Are you going to maybe just a chicken? You'll sacrifice a chicken. What are we doing? And the Bears are dancing. They're doing the limbo. How low can you go? And the Chicago fan, as an outsider, they seem genuinely excited. How many times did we see a high school football game? We saw it at a wrestling event in Chicago. We saw it at a Bulls game. Rhythmic chanting, fire, Nagy, over and over again. That was done out of enthusiasm. Enthusiasm that the Bears could bring somebody in who knows what they're doing. All right, final point. We will spend a couple of good minutes on the Lions. So if you can sum up the Detroit Lions in three words, sum up the Lions in not one, not two, but three words. I've got piecemeal, unsalvageable, and hopeless. And of course, piecemeal would be the roster of the Lions. Unsalvageable would be the reputation of every player and coach with the Lions. And the forecast is hopeless. And this is another Dan Campbell special. And I like Dan Campbell. As a gas bag, I am on the trail looking for good audio. Dan Campbell is a meathead coach who says interesting things. I pull for coaches that give me good audio. Remember the whole bite a kneecap off and all that? Well, so far, as coach of the Lions, the only biting they've been doing is on a pacifier. They've been teething all season long. Detroit football team is a cosmic accident at this point, bouncing down a never-ending interstellar staircase right into a black hole. Lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. This is now the third time that the Motor City Kitties have lost on a walk-off field goal. Three times already. The Ravens got it on that 66-yard field goal. Vikings on that crazy fluke drive with Cousins setting it up with seconds to go. And now the Chicago Bears, who had an even more ridiculous drive when you think about it, that they turned the trick. The Lions, if you didn't see the game, Lions had a 14-13 lead over Chicago. They punted the ball back to the Bears. 8:30 to go in the game. Thinking, with 8 minutes and 30 seconds, you're like, oh, we're going to get multiple possessions. Ball's going to go back and forth. Well, no. Chicago, with Andy Dalton at quarterback, held the ball for 18 plays, going 64 yards, running out the game clock, and then kicking the game-winning field goal. And it, to make it even better, the Bears could not have done that without the generosity on Thanksgiving of the Lions. Chicago ended up picking up 5 first downs on the drive. They only had to convert twice. They picked up 5 first downs. They only had to pick up 2 third downs on that drive. The signature moment, though, the defining moment of this game on the field happened coming out of the 2-minute warning. The Lions called their first timeout before a third down defensive play. And then, to the amazement of every man, woman, and child watching the game, the Lions then called a second timeout. Now, if you don't know the rules, and I assume you probably do, you're not allowed to call back-to-back timeouts. Can't do it. It's a dead giveaway. You don't know what you're doing if you call back-to-back timeouts. It's taboo. It's not allowed. They did it. The Lions did it. They called back-to-back timeouts. Holy Chris Webber, Batman. That's old school. So anyway, Dan Campbell admitted after the game, he said he knew the rule that the Lions were not allowed to call back-to-back timeouts, but, and this is an amazing admission by Dan Campbell, and this also, I throw this into the hopeless category, the unsalvageable category, that we are in week 12 of the NFL season. The head coach of an NFL team, Dan Campbell, admitted the reason he called a phantom timeout, which was not allowed, is because he said half the Lion defense had one play and half the Lion defense had another play. So somehow, I thought they huddle up at these things, right? But somehow the 11 men on the field, I think it was, sometimes the Lions play 12, didn't all know the play. So did in the huddle, how does that work? Is it like, okay, you whisper to these guys over here and you say, oh, here's this play. And then on the other side, at the other side of your mouth, you tell the guys over on the other side, all right, this is a play. And it's two totally different plays. It's like a vaudevillian comedy performance here. And the Lions were called for a defensive delay of game. Of course, they lost the timeout. And then it gets even better. After fixing the defense, getting everyone on the same page, Detroit, they played on a key third down. They played roughly 10 yards. The defensive secondary played roughly 10 yards on a third down and four play, 10 yards off the receivers, which meant even Andy Dalton was a lock to make a completion there. It's the equivalent of in baseball when you play the defense up to try to take away the run at the plate and the batting average of the hitter goes through the roof. If it's third and four and your defensive backs are playing 10 yards down the field, the math on that does not work out in your favor. It does not work out. And, of course, it did not work out in this situation for the Lions. The inevitable ended up happening.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A Buffalo Bash. Welcome in the beginning of another hour of the Ben Maller Show. We are together in the air everywhere. We are not just a pretty face. We have a face for radio. Coast to coast, border to border, and beyond on the vast and extremely powerful microphones of FSR emanating live from the pen, the bullpen, slinging bull all night into the morning here on a holiday weekend from the Fox Sports Radio studios at a secret location somewhere in the Northwoods. And so our lead this hour coming from the shores of the mighty Mississippi, as the Buffalo roam, Bills Mafia visiting New Orleans, and they went marching in to the win column. If you did not watch the game because you had other things going on, maybe you passed out from the tryptophan in the bird. So Josh Allen threw not one, not two, not three, but four touchdowns as the Bills vaporized the Saints 31-6. Buffalo improving to 7-4, getting back in the win column. It's still been a rocky month or so for the Bills, but they get to 7-4. New Orleans drops to 5-6, a losing record with a putrid offense. Putrid, doing the walk of shame would be the New Orleans offense. But let's focus in on the Bills because they are looking at a playoff spot here. They're in a neck-and-neck race with the Patriots in the NFC, or the AFC East, rather. But the question is, what do we take away from the Bills' butchering of the Saints? What's the takeaway from that? So I've got Plunger, Bambi, and Chuck Berry. And we will connect everything together here like Legos. Like Legos, what we're going to do. All right, so first of all, the better story is in the losing locker room. We know the Saints were shorthanded and all that stuff. I guess we will actually start there. What is the way you would describe what happened to New Orleans? Watching this game, I actually had high hopes. I know New Orleans was banged up and there were a bunch of players out and all that stuff, but this was a rancid performance by New Orleans. It was a dereliction of duties is the way I would describe it. It's a bad team, man. Bad, bleeping team. So the question must be asked. If we're going to talk about the Saints here, the question must be spoken without Drew Brees. What is going on with Sean Payton? Has Sean Payton been exposed as a fraud? Now, the early diagnosis, not all precincts are reporting in, but the early voting indicates that is the case. The arrow is pointing that direction. Now, the Sean Payton truthers, the people that are big believers in Sean Payton will say, well, he had a great record when Brees was there, when Brees was out. Well, Brees isn't there anymore. The roster's not as good, blah, 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 blah. All I know is that you take Drew Brees out of the equation and the arithmetic changes, the outcome changes. This offense is a clogged toilet, and it does not have a plunger right now. There is no plunger to unclog the toilet, and it's starting to spill over the sides of the toilet at this particular point. And Brees is not walking back through that door unless it's in the press box to call the game. Sean Payton has been called, among other things, a mastermind of X's and O's, a prodigy, a whiz kid of calling plays. Slobber, slobber, slobber. He's got a good resume in New Orleans, a walking encyclopedia of the playbook. But right now, this season, especially recently, without Drew Brees, without Jameis Winston, who wasn't even playing that particularly well, well, right now, Sean Payton has been neutered. He's the alligator with no teeth, would be the way we would describe the offensive play calling, the offensive coaching of the head coach, Sean Payton. The Saints had 8 first downs and 122 yards of offense over the first 3 quarters of the game. Game was over by the time the fourth quarter started, and so they added on to those numbers a bit. Still was not very impressive in extended garbage time. Now, secondly, the Sean Payton show, which runs in New Orleans, and he's got a job the rest of his life because of that Super Bowl years ago. He picks the groceries. That's important here. Right? That he's the guy that essentially picks the roster. He has final edit on the roster, and you look at the quarterback depth chart, and it's like Sean Payton went to the grocery store and shopped for apples and only picked the ones that had worms in them. The rotten apples is the ones. I only want the rotten apples in the quarterback room. I mentioned Jameis Winston. People say, well, if only Jameis Winston hadn't been hurt, that everything would have been fine. That's not exactly true. Now, Winston was carrying the torch for the Saints, but not exactly a bowl of cherries, to use the fruit analogy a little further. The Saints, when they had Winston, they played hide the quarterback, just like they've done with Trevor Siemian, but it hasn't worked with Trevor Siemian, the same rudimentary offense, which is a compliment to Jameis Winston. The other players are out, but that's part of the football business. Trevor Siemian playing quarterback. And the more that this guy plays, it's like a vampire seeing the sunlight. The results have been a toxic cloud. Siemian, who has bounced around the back river towns of the NFL, he must have compromising photos of someone in a position of power, because every time you watch this cat play, you're like, there's got to be somebody better. I mean, ah, shucks. There's got to be somebody out there. And it's Trevor Siemian. Take your medicine. Take your medicine now. You're going to stink. Now, Sean Payton did him no favors, right? The play calling was great. The execution was not great. Drew Brees, during the broadcast, if you watched it with close attention to everything, it was me saying, Drew Brees mentioned, I thought it was interesting, that Trevor Siemian, when he drops back in the pocket to throw, he goes back too far. He goes way back. He drops back further than any quarterback in the NFL, and it Fs up the offensive line. Now, you would think if Drew Brees, calling a game for the Peacock, can see that he's said that to his buddy Sean Payton, and that they can fix that, But it doesn't happen. So Sean Payton, if he was a character in a movie, it would be Disney's Bambi. Remember the rabbit Thumper? Because every time this guy plays, you get thumped. Okay, Trevor Siemian, who's about to turn 30 years old. I give him credit. I believe he's fully vested in the NFL pension. He's in the prime of his athletic career. Seventh round pick, and he's played like he should have been undrafted, but he's been able to buck the system and had a long career here. And if you go to the stats, New Orleans is 0-4 in Trevor Siemian's starts. The first two games he started, he had four touchdowns and no interceptions. And New Orleans lost close games to Atlanta. They lost to the Falcons and the Tennessee Titans. Now, the last 2 weeks, Trevor Siemian, under center, lost to the Eagles and Buffalo. And it wasn't even close, really, in both those games. So if you want to look at the numbers, don't ask. Siemian completing a little over 50% of his passes for an average of 5.4 yards per attempt and a passer rating of 73.1. Really, what's going on here is Siemian is suffering from halitosis. He's got bad breath, and the bad breath is spreading around the New Orleans locker room. All right, final thought. So as for the Bills Mafia, we'll spend a couple of minutes on that. This was what I call a Chuck Berry classic. Not Johnny B. Good. It was the Josh Allen parody song, the Josh Allen parody version of Johnny B. Good. It's Go Josh Go, Go Josh Go, Go Josh Go Go, Josh B. Good. A confidence booster pill for a fragile Buffalo team, a team capable of losing to Jacksonville. Josh Allen completing 82% of his passes for an average of 9 yards per attempt, taking a backseat to no one. He had four touchdowns in this game. They call it the Big Easy for a reason. This was the Big Easy. The Big Easy for Josh Allen. My goodness. Now, that being said, I would not be the proper cynical, bloviating gas bag if I did not have to give you the other side. And even though the Bills won in a blowout, and it's very conceivable this game could have been a shutout, that New Orleans was lucky to win the game, I am going to nitpick here. Josh Allen had two more interceptions. I said, well, it doesn't matter because Buffalo won the game, and so you're being a hater. What's wrong with you? It's wrong. It does matter. Now, those interceptions came on back-to-back drives. The reason why that matters, the last 4 weeks, a month of football, Josh Allen has 8 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions. Those interceptions are kryptonite in the postseason good teams. Kryptonite, you're done. It's over. The mafia goes home. No more tables to break. And so Buffalo, they haven't proven anything yet. They haven't proven anything yet, and the Bills were expected to win this game in a blowout. They were almost a touchdown favorite on the road. I say the same thing about Buffalo I said about the Bears. The Bears went to Detroit, were expected to win. They won. They had nothing to gain and everything to lose. You can make the same argument for the Cowboys. Cowboys were expected to beat the Raiders. They were big favorites. They lost the game, and so the Cowboys are now being goofed on. And everyone's pointing the finger, and it's like from the Simpsons. Ha ha! At the Dallas Cowboys. Because they lost to a bad Raider team. Right now, a bad Raider team with a terrible offensive line. And Derek Carr, who passed for almost 400 yards. And the Cowboy defense decided they were going to play the clutch and grab defense. And they got called for it. You'd think at some point the Cowboys would have had to come to Jesus moment. They would have had a eureka moment and said, wait a minute, they're calling the game kind of tight. I think we might want to follow the way they're calling the game, or otherwise we're going to lose the game. But that never happened. The light bulb never went off for the Raiders or the Cowboys. Either one of those. And the Raiders won the game, and they took advantage of it. The old Joe Flacco offense. And that's the secret sauce. We said it earlier in a Maller monologue back in hour one. The secret sauce for Derek Carr to win these games now is to mimic Joe Flacco. A yellow flag for you, a yellow flag for you, and a yellow flag for you. As long as the officials have the same snap judgment of throwing the flag, then Derek Carr is in really, really good shape.